Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Robert McGinnis's novels, The Attenuating Puritan and Drop Calls, offer readers deep reflections on faith, purity, and the complexities of life. His stories serve as a powerful allegory for the human condition, resonating with anyone seeking connection, resilience, and a deeper understanding of their place in the world. In a world that often challenges our purity and resolve, the hero of The Attenuating Puritan stands as a beacon of hope. His quest to overcome ancestral toxins and modern plagues like heavy metals and forever chemicals reflects the battles many of us face every day. A story of sacrifice, purity, and the pursuit of eternal love as the hero strives to regain the celestial harmony of Eden. Robert Gary McGinnis was born in Bayshore, New York. After school, he traveled west to Arizona, eventually California, where he has lived since 1976. He was an active part of the Back to Land movement, homesteaded off the grid in Northern California. He has two children, three grandchildren, and a faithful companion, a dog named Marbles. Back with us on This Week in America, Robert McGinnis, author of Drop Calls and The Attenuating Puritan. Robert, welcome back to the program. A pleasure to have you back with us.
It's all my pleasure, and a pleasure to be here. I'm glad you're back, and I'm glad you're doing well. This is very awesome. Let us both get back on our feet and move forward.
We are trying to do that and moving forward rapidly today. We're talking about the book, The Attenuating Puritan. I love both of your books, Drop Calls and this book, The Attenuating Puritan. We'll talk about them in detail in the program today. Let's start with the concept behind this and what inspired you to write The Attenuating Puritan.
Well, inspiration comes from everyday life, and you see it. Little pieces of it building up. To me, is I felt like I had been silent most of my life, and I really didn't want to be a giver or a taker of information because it was polarized and it wasn't allowing me to accept what was and what is. As I got older, I realized the importance of teaching and passing the baton down. I knew that in Ireland, you didn't get to be a writer until you at least lived a lifetime full and you had much of the world memorized by writ. So as I got to that age, a lifetime, I felt now it's time to say something. And, from the toxins we saw when we were younger to the toxins that are around us today, there's no comparison. We haven't gone forward in that. And maybe we've learned to be a little more responsible, but still the consumption and the toxins that we produce in consuming those things are really something that we need to address because we don't have a planet to offer our children or our grandchildren or our great-grandchildren that is sustainable. And moving in that direction, I really felt a deep urgency to put something out there, to give somebody a direction and let each individual be able to take a little bit of responsibility, even if it's just self-responsibility. And making a character that seems like he's against all the odds in the world and then be able to move forward in it is something that we all need to do because it gets overwhelming, and yes. When you get overwhelmed, it gets depressing and overbearing, and it makes it difficult to make a choice and to do the right thing and to even want to participate. So knowing that even if it's an endless task, is that little bit that you do is important. And that mindset of being involved and doing something is important. And that's the energy that creates the hope and the faith that we need.
It's hard.
So I thought I needed to put that down and pass it out there.
Well, you do that in such a manner that we read an entertaining story and we learn something from it. It's hard to read the book and not think, I need to do something. That's where it all begins, is with me and everybody else reading the book. It begins with them, and we all have to do this together. The name of the book is The Attenuating Puritan. Talk about that title. It really captures your attention, doesn't it?
Well, I hope so. And to me, is it plays games with me, because at some point I think of Puritan and purity and immaculate, and then the word attenuating, to where you're bringing things to a point and hopefully containing them and stopping them from doing harm. So you can attenuate things like greed and aside from toxins and things like that, power can be attenuated. But I really thought that it was a contradiction, because here we have the attenuation process happening and we have a Puritan there. So in one mindset, I'm thinking that the Puritan is no longer pure because he's been attenuating. And then in the other sense, I think of the ultimate divinity that he has, because he has the ability to attenuate. But either way, he's still one man on the planet. And part of what I wanted to break down was that when we have toxins, it's so easy to just go into physical ailments, getting sick or
Yes.
having cancer, things like that. But there's so much more to the human species and to all the other biologic species too, that are affected by it. And when you don't have a healthy body, you don't have a healthy mind. And the thing we overlook most often is that we don't have a healthy spirit. So as in the toxic days of our lives, we're reducing our ability to have any kind of spiritual awakening. It doesn't exist, because we've toxed ourselves out of it, and we created all these things that, and one of the things is that they knew is that fluoride with aluminum attenuates in the pineal gland, and the pineal gland is the seat of spirituality. So when you calcify your pineal gland, you physically make it impossible to have a spiritual experience. And throughout America, we've fluoridated our water systems, which reduce that ability to have that spiritual. And maybe it has to do with controlling people, and things like that. Is the cure for autocracy is spirituality, and before
Yes.
people take on an autocrat, they become spiritual, and in that spiritual being, they become brave, and in that bravery, they become independent. And I think that there's been a, and I don't want to call it a conspiracy, but I think that we've reduced ourselves with the need to work and the need to make money away from our pursuit of any real spiritual activities. We have mega churches, we have people screaming that they're Christians and this and that, but it lacks the spiritual context, and to associate winning wars or making money with spirituality is really a misnomer. And it's, real spirituality has to do with protecting all of life and realizing that all of life is sacred and defending all of life. And it's one foot in this world and it's one foot in the next, And when you live in that, on that fence and in that cusp, there's no need for war and there's no need for money. There's either one of them are material and they're of this world and they're not of the spirit world. And making sure that we can get back into that spirit place and teach that spirit world is what's needed right now. We have lots of Christian billionaires that are running the world, and it's very difficult to find anyone with any real spirituality.
But
So anyway, those are some of the messages that I wanted to share. And I know we need an economy, and I know we need, we go through what we go through, but I think if we lean into the spirituality, I think we can really truly find a democracy and a harmony and a place where people work together.
You do an excellent job about bringing that out. And with what you just said during those last couple of minutes, we could do probably hours talking about each of the individual sentences because one builds on the other. And you point that out, and we go through life all consumed with basically monetary issues, issues of what possessions I have, material issues, and lose track of something that's very basic in all of us, I think, and that's the spirituality, which you have in your character. Talk about the protagonist and how you went about building him, because he's the messenger with all the things you just said.
Well, I really love this character, and one of the things that I really wanted to make clear in the beginning of the story was that he was on psych meds as a child. He was drinking tainted water from a surface well, and he had some ADD or ADHD, and he was a little bit autistic. And that set the stage in one sense of showing the environment having the ability to create, and we don't know for sure, and you know, supposedly we have someone in our government that's going to let us know in the next 6 or 12 months of what the cause of autism is, which to me is absolutely a ridiculous statement and shouldn't be taken seriously. And the reason for that is because when we know that there's different types of autism, and there's Fragile X syndrome, where there's a repeat of a particular gene on a chromosome 100 times, 120 times. And that's one type of autism. Now we have one in 30 live births is born with on the autism spectrum. So it's not saying what kind, but to say that there's a cause and we're going to know what that cause is in 6 months, we have people working on, is ridiculous. Is if you think about having a billion and a half base pairs and any alteration to a nucleic acid or to a codon could potentially reduce a protein from being made or the absorption of something happening. All those things have the possibility of creating somebody that is stuck, you know, or yes, or diverted, you know. So with all the possibilities in a billion and a half base pairs, we're going to find that we have individuals with lots of different anomalies. And we're going to find that, yes, it's true, it can be caused by forever chemicals, and it can be caused by this, and it can be caused by that, can be caused by viruses, you know. So I think we're going to find, when we really care to find, when you say that there's one cause, to me it looks like they're going to set up a program where they'll fund families with a particular type of autism with a little bit of money, and then ignore a whole bunch of people and a whole bunch of people's problems as we try to get the government to spend less and people to be more involved in their in-home health care. And like Elon Musk was saying, we need to have a whole new lower class of people. And they're the people that don't get any assistance. And they're the people that learn to make do, and the ones that realize that it's not the government that take care of people, it's the people that take care of people. And it's not the government that answers to God, it's the people that answer to God. And I think that's an important thing. But I wanted to have the Puritan be autistic, and I wanted him to be stuck in his own world and not see what other people are doing. I mean, he might observe them, but not relate to them, you know, because he's on a mission that is impossible. And if he's distracted by anything, he doesn't get his work done. So he's, you know, is stuck on cleaning up the Garden of Eden, and he only answers to God. And in his everyday life, he is continually answering to God and answering to himself to try to do the best he can to clean up Eden. And that's the way that work has to happen, is later when everybody has regained spirituality, then they can start communing with other people. But that's one of the things that's been stolen from us, you know, is, you know, in the Christian type churches, is that we have fellowship, you know, and a fellowship is great in the material, physical world.
Yes.
But it lacks spirituality. It, you know, and when we talk about the true spirituality, when you're communing with nature, you go up the mountain and you talk to God, and God talks directly to you. And when there's chatter, you don't hear God. And that's a major problem. Our time has been taken from us. And more importantly, our quiet has been taken from us. And when we don't hear quiet, then we can't hear God. And all the noise that we're making, you know, and to me, cell phones is another big instrument in the inability for a person to find true quiet on his path to spirituality. And yeah, and I've talked about that several times as well.
Talk about why you think people will do anything to avoid quiet. Quiet for so many people is a bad thing.
Well, it's very interesting with that too, you know, because quiet means more than just sound, you know. There's lots of different kinds of quiet, you know. Is even if you go out and it's quiet, if the wind is blowing, there's noise. If the creek is running, you hear the creek.
Yes.
But that's not the quiet that I'm talking about. I'm talking about is really listening to yourself. You know, is the pharmaceutical company thrives on people's inability to talk to themselves and to hear themselves. They found that when sick people were left to themselves, they usually knew that the medicine that they lived was right outside the door, you know, and you don't see it. It might be an invasive species. It might be something else, but there's something in all those other living species that can help cure or help you with your situation. And instead of, and that's, you know, but that's one of the arguments that I have about the cell phones, is that we know that they can not only limit short-term memory, but they have the ability to change our genes. And when you look at changing genes, you're actually, to me, it breaks the commandment of honor thy mother and father, because the honor and thy mother and father is really a reference to where you came from genetically. You know, and it's not just your physical mother and father, it's your mother and your grandmother and your grandfather and your great grandmother and on down the line. And that's what's sacred, is that DNA that they've passed. And to keep it intact, to give it to the future, is what needs to be sacred and to be honored. And they use that word honor like it had meaning, you know, not like a throwaway word. Now we know cell phones can alter our DNA. So for a contrivance of convenience or for self-gratification, you can throw that commandment out the window and gratify yourself, not paying any attention to the risk that you take in not honoring thy mother and father. Like I said, it's when you're altering your DNA, you have phylogenetic memory loss. And in phylogenetic memory loss, those very medicines I were talking about that are right out your door, you knew them because your ancestors knew them, and they're memories that are buried in your genetics. And it's the same with like the fear of spiders. That's something that we've had for many, many generations, and for good cause. And we know, even when we're babies, to be afraid of spiders. You know, it's built into our DNA.
Yes.
They're phylogenetic memories, and we don't have to be conscious of them to still have that information at our fingertips. And throwing that information away is one of the, to me, it's one of the ultimate sins. You know, is we should be aware of that. And when we get sick, we should know what we did that made us sick, and we should know what we need to get to find it. And real interesting, when Edgar Cayce used to go into trance and find cures for different ailments, he would go to sleep and dream, and then his nurse and his wife would take down all the notes, what was in his dream. But many times he would find the cure for a child that was sick, or an elderly person that was sick, with plants that he'd never physically saw and didn't even grow on the continent where he was living. But it was, and some people were saying, well, he was clairvoyant and stuff like that. But there's also a clairvoyance that allows you to read what's in the code of your genetics and give you that window to the universe, and taking the time to hear yourself, which is where the quiet comes in. You know, can you really use what you have to solve these problems? And I'll tell you, is the majority of people don't have enough quiet to even start thinking about that.
It's just amazing, and so much there when Robert's on the program. It's always a moment of self-reflection, and we understand the message and what we need to do to make corrections. This book is The Attenuating Puritan by Robert McGinnis, McGinnes, 1N. McGinnes. I'll get that. It's on our screen, so you can go ahead and go check the bios, and you'll be able to do that here and get there and spell it correctly. RobertMcGinnesBooks.com is the website. McGinnis again, McGinnes. The book's available, of course, wherever books are sold. The Attenuating Puritan and the other book we talked about here, Dropped Calls. Let's talk about the takeaway. When people read this book, what do you hope stays with them when they put the book down and then move on to something else with their lives? What message do you want as a takeaway?
Well, like we spoke of most of this program, is for people to understand spirituality and to try to get back on board with it and look for the quiet, you know. And realize that regardless of what you do and how alone you feel, you're part of the Grex, you're part of humanity, and you're never truly alone, you know, and there's no job that is too big, you know, so when we talk about all the plastic in the ocean, you know, if we clean it up, then there's not. If we say there's nothing I can do, then there is, you know, and if 8 billion of us thought we could do something, that would be many hands making for light work. So I don't want people to feel overwhelmed, but I want them to feel like they're participating in the rebirth of spirituality.
That's so important for people to figure, okay, I'm just a person, but just a person can contribute, can't they?
Yes, and it's, you know what is, part of it is finding faith and hope and being a beacon of that, you know, and I was saying in another interview is that the egotist is afferent and all the universal signaling goes to him. You know, and when he becomes altruistic, he's efferent and all the signaling goes out, you know. So as if you have that little bit of faith and you can broadcast it, that is very helpful. And the same with doing the work is it's not necessarily to get the job done, but it's to be taking a step in the right direction, you know, and as soon as you stop, then you're not taking the step and you're not making the motion. And we really need to know that our hopes or and our faith is based on our actions. And as small as those actions may be, it has a ripple effect because everybody sees that you care and everybody sees that you hope and everybody sees your faith. And that's important. That's a message that needs to be shown.
Who is the target audience for this book, The Attenuating Puritan? Who did you design this for?
Well, to tell you the truth is with 1 in 30 live births on the autism spectrum and everybody looking out their window over a toxic landscape, I think it's a mature audience, but I think that all adults can participate in the reading of the book and taking a piece of it with them.
And the book's available wherever books are sold, The Attenuating Puritan by Robert McGinnis. The other book that we've talked about before here is Dropped Calls. Briefly give me the synopsis of that, because I love Dropped Calls, and it's something I think we can all relate to.
Okay. Dropped Calls is a collection of 3 short stories, And they were designed to be read over and over again with hopefully different levels of enlightenment being brought to the reader. The first story is 5 G's Over Walden Pond, and it really explores what we were talking about earlier about cell phones. And it's a fiction story. I don't want to call it an adventure story, but it's a fiction story made up, not necessarily based in the real world, but it has real world things in it. And I really wanted to point out is that even if you don't have a cell phone, you can't get away from cell phones. I have a guy that goes making an illegal campsite at Walden Pond because he wanted to go back and live a life more simply. He left the city, and one of his big things was to break free of his cell phone for a little while, and he goes there with no cell phone, but he can't get away from the noise that we were talking about. He can hear the highway. He can hear jets going yes. by. And when he lays down at night, he sees satellites going by one after another. and he's just surrounded by all this noise. And there was no way he could go back and live like Thoreau, life more simply. And, then it gets into other stuff. But that was the main message that I wanted to point out is even if you don't have a cell phone, you can't get away from it.
Drop call.
The next.
Yeah, go ahead. Finish up the third one.
The next story was The Dream Catchers of Laura Mago. And it's about a young boy that goes to Wisconsin and he kills a couple of people. And like Mao said, is all revolutions are just wars. All counter-revolutions are unjust wars. And the Tsar is so impressed with the way he got rid of the revolutionaries, he invites him down to his resort. And the kid, not wanting to go empty-handed when he's going to rub elbows and hobnob with the rich people, he tries to think of a gift that is worthy of the elite. And he scalps the two people that he kills, and he hangs the scalps on willow hoops. And he paints a line around the circumference because they died at night, and dots on them because they died by gunfire, and lines through them because they were defending the streets. Now, I had just read a couple of books, The Frontiersman of New York, which came out in 1882, and The Life of Brandt, which was even older, came back in 1838. And it made me think of King George. And he monetized the taking of scalps during the American Revolution. And he was paying $8 for a scalp. And if it was a military person, he'd pay up to $20 for a scalp. The scalps upstate New York would have to go across the border into Canada to get compensated for. And one parcel that they intercepted had 1,599 scalps in it.
Wow.
29 of them were infants. And many of them were women. So when Brandt came out, he said, I don't fight women and I don't fight children. So they were really looking at the British soldiers dressing up as Indians and scalping the American people or the revolutionaries. And it made me think is now here we have someone monetizing the taking of scalps. So you look at King George and he's an egotist. All the universal signaling goes to him. And he's material, he's of the earth and stuff, like we had talked about earlier in the show. And he's transitory because the universe doesn't live that way. It doesn't exist that way for the long period. It's a temporary thing. So in my story is he hangs one scalp in the east window and one in the west. And the one in the east window, the hair's facing in. The one in the west window, the hair's facing out. And in the east window, the hair starts oscillating and it starts sending the truth of the universe like a laser beam towards the Tsar's desk. And it's so much information so fast that it causes seizures and he falls away from his desk. And when he goes back into his office, he cannot look at that scalp. He's afraid of it. He can't look yes. at that truth. And so he looks at the other one and it's one man's life, and it's at talking speed, and he becomes friends with this scalp that is radiating information to him, but at talking speed, and he grows empathy for the revolutionaries, which was why he invited the kid down there in the first place, was because he liked how the counter-revolutionaries handled the revolutionaries. But now all of a sudden he's getting a little empathy. And in that empathy, a sprig of altruism grows. And he goes from being afferent, signaling like King George, to efferent. And now he has something to give. And he goes from being material to being ethereal. And he goes from being transitory to being eternal. And that's the turning point and the crux of that story, is how the gift from the kid turned him from being the egotist to the altruist. And, again, it's a combination of the history books that I read and the current events that were going on. On the cover of the book, there's a tower that looks like Mar-a-Lago. And in the window, you can see a dream catcher. And I asked people, who does that dream catcher belong to? You know, what's that made of? And I haven't had one person tell me who it was. And it just seems like that it's over people's heads unless you break it down and say it. Well, the young kid that I was talking about that goes to Wisconsin is Kyle Rittenhouse.
Oh,
the
yes.
The two people that he killed were Anthony Hooper and Joseph Rosenbaum, and the scalp belongs to one of those two people.
Interesting. When I have Robert on, first of all, the time goes way too quickly. Second of all, I want to slow this down a little bit. I'm going to go back and listen to the interview several times to pick up everything that he's talking about, because it is so well presented, so well thought out, so well presented. The last part we're talking about, Drop Calls, that book's still available. The Attenuating Puritan, the focus of the interview today, that book, of course, available. Both available at Robert's website, robertmcginnisbooks.com. You'll find them at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of the usual places. Link on our website will take you directly to Robert's website. Robert, it is always a pleasure. Can't wait to have you back on the program. So much more to talk about. Excellent presentation today. Good to see you again, and thank you so much for being with us on the program.
Oh, my pleasure, and thank you, Rick. I really appreciate you. You take care of yourself.
You as well. Always a pleasure to have Robert with us on the program. The books, The Attenuating Puritan and Drop Calls, both of those available at Robert's website as well as any bookstore across the country. If it's not there, ask for it. You're listening to This Week in America, and we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.